And welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
I hope you're beating the heat out there on internet land, because right now here in the East Coast it's like 9 degrees. I'm still trying to go through Ring Fit Adventure. I'm sweating up a storm. It's so hot.
Suffer, Will. Feel the burn.
Yeah, also here, not feeling the burn, but suffering from the paint scars, is King Koopa Keith.
I don't know what Will is talking about. You know what? I'm fine. Everything's fine. Everything's on fire, but everything is just fine.
Everything is fine. Drink's
awesome.
Totally awesome. Super duper.
Destiny 2 has a great emote of that. I love it.
Uh-huh. All right, we got a big show for you today, talking about a lot of interesting things, and so we're going to all start off with, what have you been playing? I'm going to go first, because I can honestly say I've been playing a lot. So, in the last week, I have played four different games of major standing. I'll start off with the smallest of the four, which is Fire Emblem Heroes. So we had a new banner come in. It was the legendary banner for Seelith, who was Son of Sigurd. And know your lore. And so I'm like, okay, let's get Seelith. So I'm watching the trailer reveal, and I'm going through the characters, and I'm looking at their orb attributes, if you will. And I'm like, okay, that's gray, that's green, that's gray, that's blue, yada yada. And Seelith is red. So I'm like, okay, there's like not a lot of red competition. And then right at the end, there is one red, and her name was Mari, whatever. Let me look up the name again. It's the Daydream Fairy who always sleeps.
Maribel, I think so.
Yeah, Mirabilis. And the moment I saw her on the trailer, I'm like, yep, I'm going to summon her, which is bad because I've already summoned her. But I'm like, no, let's just hope. So I get to the banner day, and sure enough, I'm summoning, not getting anything. And about 40 orbs in, who do I summon? Mirabilis. And I'm mad. I mean, I called it. I called my shot, and I got it, unfortunately. And so I'm like, well, suck. Well, I'm not going to let this go to waste. So I keep summoning, and eventually I get to about 90 orbs in, and I finally summon Sothis. I wanted Sothis for a long time, never got her, not in a regular form, not in her holiday form. I got the original version, so I ended it right there, because I'm like, I'm done. So I had like 225 some odd orbs, and but yeah, that was an experience that was not the best, but I did get Sothis, so I'll take it as a win. Unlike Will, who got like two Seelifts without trying. Yeah. All right, my second major game that I played was Xenoblade Chronicles, which is, if you recall last week's show, I had finished the game. I finished the main game. I reviewed the game before I beat it, which is something I rarely ever do, but it just took so long to beat this game. It was like 40-plus hours. And then I played Future Connected, which is the epilogue story, which basically reveals what happened about a year after the main game. And it was good until it stopped. And you're like, well, what does that mean? Well, it was doing really good character progression. It was doing really good stuff with Shulk and Melia. And the enemy of the game, who is called the Fog King, it was really menacing, really intimidating, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, this is good. So we reached a certain point in the game, and I'm like, okay, we probably got like a few hours left. Oh, no. No. It was literally the end of the game. We beat the bad guy, like, no problem. He gets taken out. I won't say how. I won't spoil it. But he gets taken out in a way that is so quick and seamless. It's like, well, why couldn't you do that 6 hours earlier? And I'm like, and I was told that this epilogue story was, like, 10 to 20 hours. That was from the creator. And I was doing side quests and everything. I got every single one of those Nopon Rangers, who were great once I learned how to use them. But, I beat it in 6 hours flat. Like, not with side quests, with a little bit of grinding. Like, it was nothing. And yet, it was like, hey, this is how we're ending the game. I'm like, really? Like, that's how you end it? And, I mean, it was momentous in a certain way, but they literally rushed from scene to scene to scene. And, like, if you were expecting the other characters to show up and talk with Melia and Shulk, you're only going to get half of that. And I won't say, and it should be pretty obvious based on the time frame what half you're getting. But it's like, what is going on here? And I don't know. It wasn't bad, but it was definitely a case of was this really necessary? And I have a feeling I know what they were quote-unquote teasing for the future of the Xenoblade series, but they could have done a little bit better in, you know, actually fleshing it out, because I still have no idea what the heck went on. All right? I mean, DC Comics with their Crisis events make more sense than this, and that's saying something as a person who knows what happened in Final Crisis. So, yeah. That was very curious. If I was to give it a grade, I guess it'd be like 3, and I'm being generous, but yeah. The third major game, yeah, see, I still got 2 more games to go. My third major game was I played Shantae and the Seven Sirens. I had actually gotten the game while I was playing Xenoblade, but I had to beat that first. And so I dedicated the last week to playing Shantae, and if you recall, this is a long time ago, but during the Wii U era, very, very long time ago, I had proclaimed that Shantae Half Genie Hero was the game of the year for when it came out on Wii U. And I hold to that. I can now say with Shantae the Seven Sirens, it's not even close to Half Genie Hero. And I know that sounds bad, and I know, and it's, you know, I'm sure that some people will be like, well, Todd, you just didn't, you know, view it the right way. And that might be true, but there was the Metroidvania aspect, which was just way too overblown. It totally overreached. I legit thought in the first hour of the game that I had found a game-breaking bug because they didn't tell me what to do. They had no tutorial in the game. There's no tutorial here. And so I didn't understand how Shantae jumped when going out of a level. So I couldn't reach a platform because I had to actually hold the button as I was transitioning out of the stage so I could reach it. Which you'd think they would tell you, but they don't. So I was... And then I was playing on PC, which is not anyone's fault. We got a review code for it. But my computer ain't the best, and at times it would show me the cutscenes, and sometimes it wouldn't show me the cutscenes, and the loading screens took forever. Again, that's my fault, not the game's, that I know of. But there was... It had a lot of good elements. The writing and the humor is still there. They were more shameless in this game than they have ever been with a Shantae title.
Like,
not even close.
Oh, shameless.
Okay, in Half Genie Hero, there were certain characters that were, what's the right word? Voluptuous. Let's call it that.
Okay.
Okay, like one of the first bosses where they were unapologetically voluptuous, but then that was basically it. You still faced Squid Baron, you still faced Armor Baron, and everything that. I swear to God, half the enemies were not only female, but voluptuous females. The various sirens, only one of them didn't have their chest showing.
I was gonna say, Todd, this is not the first time you played a Shantae game, is it?
No. I told you, I played
Half-Genie
Hero. Exactly. Half-Genie Hero did not have it this bad.
But it was there.
Huh?
It was there, though.
It was there. Like, Sky and Shantae. There was a fake genie, but she was more covered up. Like, this was so blatant, it was like Will on Twitter. Oh! Yada, yada. But... Like it was almost unapologetic in like the worst way possible, and like I'd have to not. I'll be honest. It's been a while since I played Half Genie Hero, but I seriously don't remember it being this bad. So, and again, I know it's just my personal taste, but yeah. Anyway, also the gameplay, the bosses were like bullet sponges, and not in the fun way. I mean, there was one boss I swear it took me over 10 minutes to beat because you could only hit her in a mech suit when she did this one action. And I was doing, like, 30 damage per section 10-20 times, and only then did she go down. And then the next one, I beat in 2 minutes flat. I'm, like, kind of inconsistent. There are other elements that just didn't click. The visuals were fine. The cutscenes were fine. I did like the cutscenes, even though they were just as shameless as everything else. But
you do know that this is Studio Trigger you're talking about, yes? You do realize that.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. But it's just like they... No, I'm not going into this. But I like the cutscenes. I definitely agree that we do need a Shantae anime. Yes, I know it'll be shameless. It's fine. I'll allow it. And I know Will allow it. But the voice acting, though, is very inconsistent because, like, cutscenes, 100% voice acted. The dialogue sections, like 25%.
Okay.
And I mean, like, Shantae had the most lines, obviously, but other times you just hear, like, random little spurts from the other characters, like Sky and Bolo and Roddy Tops and Uncle and all of them. And then the other characters just didn't have anything at all outside the sirens. Or, I'm sorry, outside the other half-genies. It's like, you have the voice actors and actresses there. Why not convey? I mean, it's just a few extra words. It's like a couple hundred extra words. It couldn't have cost you that much. So, again, was it a bad game? No. I gave it a 3 out of 5 in my review. It was a fun title. It was short. It was actually about the same time that it took for Future Connected to finish up, about six, seven hours. I didn't go for all the collectibles, but you know, if you did, it'd probably only be like 8 hours or so. But so Half Genie Hero was longer, which is hilarious because that was a Kickstarter game that was intentionally shorter because of the content with the stretch goals, but still. But it was a fine game, but I think there's been better Shantae titles, especially Half Genie Hero, which I gave a 4.5 out of 5. I really did love that game from start to finish. This one, I honestly needed a guide at points because the Metroidvania aspects were just so out of control, I didn't know where to go at points. And I had to find a guide to help me out because I was like, oh, I got to go here. Oh, then I got to go all the way to this side of the world to get this one thing to go back to the other side. Very frustrating.
Yes.
So a fine game. I do hope they rein it in a little bit more for Shantae 6, which I totally want. So, and then today I played Fire Emblem Three Houses. I'm continuing my Silver Snow run. I missed this. I really did miss it. I like Fire Emblem a lot, obviously. And I was stuck in a month, like at the beginning of a month cycle, and I was like, okay, I gotta go through all these battle sequences, and now I'm about to do a story mission, and I'm just like, I'm still wanting to get my dream team all together, like with Phoenix and Sylvain and Manuela and all them, so that's gonna be fun. But this will carry me over for a while until another game pops up. I still gotta get the Pokemon DLC, which I'll get eventually, but still gotta get that, and then I'm pretty sure I'm not gonna get Paper Mario, but maybe I will if Nintendo gives us a review code. I doubt they will, but you never know. You gotta believe.
You never know. Yeah.
All right, Keith, how about you? What have you been playing outside of Mario Paint?
I'm trying to think of a snappy comeback there. Mario Paint was a good one.
Thank you.
I don't have one, so yeah. I've been playing.
You should have done a Splatoon. Ton.
I haven't played something. I haven't, but I haven't played it. I've been playing a lot of Destiny 2. Honestly, the new season is really good, so I've been playing a lot of that. Other than that, I've been playing with sticks and drywall, and like you said, paint.
So, would you say that if it wasn't for this podcast breaking up your day, it would be your Destiny 2 paint?
Yes. Yes.
That's why I'm the host. Yeah. Well, I'm just curious, what color are you painting with?
Oh, so this is actually awesome. So, cute story. So, over the course of the past 2 weeks of my vacation, we got a new car for my wife. Well, not new, but it was a 2014 Kia Soul.
Dude, I have a 2014 Kia Forte. That's weird.
It had like 64,000 miles on it and was only $8,000. It was in great condition. I'm like, yeah. We can pay that off really quick.
Yeah.
So, because the plan was my daughter was supposed to buy her PT Cruiser from her because we fixed everything, new engine, everything. But, yeah, teenagers doing teenagers, so we'll talk about that another time. But
right.
We went to the Kia dealership the other day to get another key because they only gave us one key. And, of course, you know, the key fobs are expensive. So while we were waiting for the program, the new key fob, we looked at a bunch of cars in the parking lot, and there was a 2020 Kia Niro, N-I-R-O, and the paint was really cool looking. And we looked at the paint. It was called Solar Orange.
Solar Orange.
So she was like, that's a nice car. We should paint the room that color. I'm like, okay, sure, why not? So as I'm at the store today looking for a paint that's close enough to that color, I stumbled across another paint that was almost identical to that car. And the name of the paint was called 100 MPH. And I'm like, this paint is called 100 miles per hour. This is calling out to me.
Oh,
I'm getting
I heard NPH. I'm like, wait, it's 100% Neil Patrick Harris?
No. NPH. I was like, that's cool. So that's the color we're painting.
Okay.
So
the room, the basement itself, the long portion of the basement, the original finish part of the basement is a blue color. It's like a superhero blue. So when you step through the threshold to get to the new room, it's going to be the 100 miles per hour red paint. But we did, what was it called? We used the computer to look at the how it look aspect and whatnot, and it looked really nice. When you step through it, it goes, oh, this is a complete different room. So that's what we're doing. We're painting that color. We still have no idea what we're doing with that room, other than a computer desk in here. We have zero idea, but it's done.
All right. I mean, you got time to figure out and do time.
We were talking about that today. I'm like, you know, I always did want an arcade machine, and they've got that X-Men versus Street Fighter cabinet coming out from Arcade One. I might want to get one or two of those and put it in that room.
Oh, jeez.
Nice. We'll have to wait and see. It's an ongoing project. Who knows? Maybe at the end of the year I'll have like a bazillion arcade machines in there or something, and my wife wants to kill me because I know.
Rent them out as an arcade. You could do a rent out arcade.
That entire world, if you see my entire base now, it basically could be a freaking arcade now. I literally could make money by putting arcade machines in there. It looks it's that because again, the basement runs the entire span of the house.
Huh. It's a big basement.
Yeah, it is. It's freaking huge. Which is one of the reasons why I was like, we need to get this house.
Gotcha. Nice.
But yeah, I've been doing that and again, playing Destiny 2. There's a new game that came out, or beta came out today for a game I've been waiting for a while, but because I've been working in the basement, I did not get a chance to play it yet. That game being Mortal Shell. Soon. Maybe when everybody falls asleep.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, alright.
Gotcha.
Alright, Will, how about you?
Nothing really much has changed since my last week. I have been continuing on my trek with Last of Us Part 2, and I've kind of reached up to the halfway points of Last of Us, with I finally playing as Abby. And, I mean, story-wise, I can definitely see why people don't really like it, but at the same time, I can kind of understand why Neil Druckmann went with the focus as he did with the duality of human beings. I mean, again, two different sides of every story and all that, so I can kind of understand Druckmann. I still kind of dislike him, what he did, but again, I understand his way of storytelling, quote-unquote. And of course, naturally, I've been continuing on my Ring Fit adventure, currently out at level 11 right now. It's slow burning, but I'm getting up there. And yeah, overall, it's... Yeah, what more I can say about Ring Fit Adventure? So I was like, yes, it is the perfect good regiment right now to have in this current time period of this world. So yeah, just currently sweating out, all that, just doing my exercises, and overall, I'm just glad I'm finally getting active again, honestly. And also, just minorly as well, yeah, Fire Emblem Heroes Magical and pull off two legendary setups, which... I'm just really surprised that my luck was so lucky. I'm like, okay, don't get Sultus, don't get Marifalus. I'm like, oh, two legendary stuff. Okay, I'm good. I'm happy. Thank you, RNG gods. Thank you.
Very well.
So overall, just like I'm really glad for Fire Emblem. So now just stocking up my orbs. Don't have to do a blood sacrifice. Thank the RNG gods. And yeah, just
you can
overall,
do it anyway. Just do it anyway. Just do it anyway. You know.
Just do it. And just fun because funny enough as well. Like I know this is not really Nintendo related, but I hope it does. But yeah, recently.
When has that ever stopped you, Will?
Because if you have seen the recent news in the Persona news, Kotobu Kia actually released the news of their new Kasumi Yoshizawa figurine, which overall the details of Kasumi Yoshizawa with in her action pose with her mask as Benita Stance, very similar style to the first Joker figurine from Kotobu Kia, which I actually did manage to go in pre-order, which. It looks so nice, that Kasumi Yoshizawa. So yeah, I managed to go and pre-order that thing, so I can't wait until it comes in November. And
we won't make it to November. We're doomed. I've already predicted it. October 27th. That's it. That's the end of the world.
Atlas, if you're listening to this podcast, please bring Persona 5 Scramble to the Switch right now, stateside, please! Okay.
No, not Persona 5 Scramble, Persona 5.
I don't want a Warriors title game.
I want pure Persona.
But it is.
No, it's not. They literally said it's a Warriors title, and
it's
we've already
so
had.
It's so much fun.
I don't care. I don't care. We want the ridge. We've been asking for the original Persona. They keep saying, oh, you need to ask for it. We have!
We did in a survey.
I will go get my copy of Persona 5 and put it on my Switch. There you go. Persona 5 on Switch. Are you happy?
No, I'm not happy because that's your copy, not mine. Now, if you want to send me your PS4 so I can get, and then send me your copy of Persona 5, whatever, and then I can play that, then I'll be happy. So, yes, Keith, go ahead and do that. Be a good boss.
I'm going to send him a copy of Persona and a PlayStation 4.
Yes.
I got to get a PlayStation 4 first.
Oh, there you go. Wait, how do you play Persona then?
Who's that isn't playing it anymore?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
And of course, now Persona 4 Golden is currently on PC right now. So yeah, everyone's been playing that now. So yes, everyone's
still
playing
on Switch.
Hey, Atlas, there you go. Proof that putting more games on PC sells the game, and that there are less pirates out there than people like to say there are.
Okay,
we do buy stuff.
First of all, you know better than you know just as well as I that while you can put a game on PC, doesn't mean they're going to sell. And the Switch has sold many more games than PC in many certain titles, including certain million sellers that only did well because of their Switch ports. And being on Steam or the Epic Game Store or GOG or whatever.
I like to put a quick spotlight to a certain free game that actually released it on Steam, which is called Helltaker, that have taken the world by storm.
It's free.
And it has done well. It has done well.
Yep, it's free. Everyone's going to try free at least once if they know about it. Look at a certain ninja game that you're very happy with. Do you think if that was pay first, anybody would have played it to the number that it did?
Maybe.
No.
Who knows?
No.
People do dumb stuff, you know.
Yes,
you
people
know.
do dumb stuff. People do dumb stuff. But no. All right, but this is a perfect segue because there has been some interesting news of the week. So, it's time to go down the warp pipe. Hello.
Hi.
My name is Todd Black, and I, like you, suffer from a condition that is sweeping the world as we know it. That condition is Joy-Con drift.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that you're also a fan of F-Zero, and you're upset that Nintendo has not given us a new one yet. But continue.
No. It's like, I know what you're thinking, but Todd, I don't know if I suffer from Joy-Con drift. Well, if you have to ask, you don't suffer from it, so sit down and shut up. Joy-Con drift is, of course, the terrible condition in which an overused or just plain used Joy-Con on a Nintendo Switch drifts. It can drift up. It can drift down. It can drift left. And it can drift right. Or it can go in so many directions, you get dizzy.
Can
it
do the Konami code?
What?
Can it do
the
Konami
code? I'm trying to do like a PSA. Why do you keep interrupting me?
Comedy, man. Comedy.
I am the comedy!
Are you?
Yes, that's why I'm the host. All right, fine. Seriously, though, Joy-Con drift is still killing people. I have recently found out that I have Joy-Con drift, which sucks, but Nintendo will occasionally fix it if you send it in, which you now have the ability to because they've opened up their stores, but in terms of them admitting that there's a problem, they're really not going to do it because during their 80th annual general meeting of shareholders, say that five times fast, President Shuntaro Furukawa gave a brief apology, saying, quote, "Regarding the Joy-Con, we apologize for any trouble caused to our customers. We are continuing to aim to improve our products, but as the Joy-Con is the subject of a class action lawsuit in the United States, and this is still a pending issue, we would like to refrain from responding about any specific actions."
Oh, boy.
Yeah. In short, they can't comment because if they did, they would admit that they did something wrong, and that would cost them a lot of money.
But didn't they admit that this was an issue in the past, before the whole COVID-19, which is why they were like, you know what, we realize this is an issue, send your Joy-Cons in and we'll fix it? Pretty sure they did.
I think they did, but then the lawsuit happened.
Kinda.
And,
yeah.
The lawsuit was in 2019, and I think it like picked up and put down and picked back up again. I don't remember, but... There's a class action lawsuit going on there.
Yeah, it happened July 2019. They
there
put a thing out saying, hey, we will fix it for you. Just send it in for free.
Yeah. Apparently that's not enough, but I would send it in, but I'm not sure if that's the best idea, especially with the COVID situation. I don't know when I'll get it back. But, of course, just buying new Joy-Cons isn't exactly the best option either. So, yeah, not the best. But, hey, at least you got a kind of apology. Kind of.
I'll wait until for Kyle-san like releases a new line of Joy-Cons. Like, yes, bring back the good Mario Red Joy-Con back. It's fully improved. Like, yes, these lines are fully improved. No more Joy-Con drifts. Like, it has finally been solved. Yeah, I'll be waiting for that first.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, praise be. Okay, and now for my rant of the week. Paper Mario, the Origami King.
Uh-oh.
Now, yeah, oh yeah. What, did you think I was going to talk about F-Zero? That's your territory.
I know, Keith.
Oh, boy. So, me and Tyler have been talking at length over the last about month since the announcement of the Origami King, and saying that it's really disconcerting that Nintendo and Intelligent Systems, who is the developer of the game franchise, continues to just throw random gimmicks at the wall to see what sticks. Between the ring-based system, the, what's it called?
Ring Fit?
No. The bosses,
Stationary bosses?
Stationary bosses, thank you, Will. I kept hearing custodian in my head. I'm like, they're not janitors, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did that in a future game. Because, you know, wet paper, it's right there. But, no,
Stationary bosses.
Thank you. I don't know how I go from C to S. That doesn't make sense. The stationary bosses and everything else that's going on. We are wondering, why are they doing this? I mean, what is the point? Well, we have an answer now, and it's infuriating. So, speaking with Game Informer, Nintendo producer Kensuke Tanabe talked about how, in his mind, it is more important to come up with new ideas than stay with old ones. Quote, "When continuing a game series, it's much easier to carry over the basics from an existing game system rather than building new systems for each new installment. But that's not how you create new experiences or unexpected surprises. As a game designer, I want to deliver new experiences and surprises to our fans, so I will always challenge myself to create something new. To be sure, I will sometimes use the same system in a subsequent game to further develop the system until I feel it has reached its full potential. But my goal is to continue to tackle new challenges as much as possible," end quote. Objectively, I admire this. I admire that he wants to try and make something new. I admire that he wants to give new experiences to fans, give them surprises, give them something fresh and fulfilling. But there's a difference between trying to make something new and trying to redefine what an established, beloved game series is. And I'll give you the greatest examples. Pokemon. Think about the Pokemon franchise. Think about how it's evolved from Red and Blue and Yellow to Sword and Shield. What really has changed? The graphics, obviously. The kinds of battles you can have. You can have doubles, you can have online battles, etc., etc. How Pokemon handle items. True. Mega Evolution. Z moves. Cool. Open world content via Sword and Shield's wild area. Fine. But did they really change the battle system? Like, in a significant, major, this is not Pokemon way? No. They haven't done that since the first game. They have added stuff to it. They have added new items. They have added the Z-moves. They've added Mega Evolutions. They've added other things. Again, tag team battles. That's all fine. But that's still in the realm of what Pokemon is as a turn-based RPG. Every time they have edited it, it's another game franchise entirely. Like Stadium, which is still RPG. Or Pokemon Snap, which is not. Or look at Pokemon... What's the new one? Unite. Okay. That still plays like Pokemon, but it's a MOBA, and thus it's completely different. But that still is Pokemon, and the main core Pokemon franchise has honestly barely evolved, from when it started, which is fine, because you know that people will play it. Look at another game. Look at Call of Duty.
Oh, let's not go there, please.
Okay, fine, we'll not go there. Metal Gear, how about that? Metal Gear. Every game that Kojima makes is still the same gameplay. It is, you know, tactical, strategic, many ways to beat a level, many ways to beat a boss. Has it grown in scale? Yes. Did it grow in abilities? Yes. Did the story... Well, let's not talk about the story. And then what happens when Kojima leaves? They make Metal Gear Survive, and everybody's like, what the frick? Okay? You are deciding without the consent... Okay, I know that's not the right word. Without the feelings of fans in mind, what they're going to think of these new gameplay things. You can make your new innovations. You can make new additions. You can alter things slightly, but when you're going from a turn-based RPG, including Thousand Year Door, which is still hailed as one of the greatest RPGs ever made, and you turn it into Sticker Star, and you turn it into Color Splash, and now Origami King, which is completely different from the games we loved, and you're saying, oh, but we're doing this for you. No, you literally just said you're doing it for you, because you think that this is the way to go. You think that this is the innovations we need to have to keep the games fresh. That's not true. That's not true at all. There's a way to evolve games while still feeling true. Look at this one Will will like. Final Fantasy. Think of Final Fantasy 1 to, like, what, 10?
10, like, 12, 13, 10, yeah.
10 was the same. 11 was the MMO. 12, they did a little bit more of a free form, but it was still RPG. 13, well, let's not talk about 13. 14 was the MMO. 15 was God. And then Final Fantasy VII Remake, completely redone, new graphics, redone battle system, but it still feels like Final Fantasy, just a natural evolution of the franchise. And the Final Fantasy fans have called out Square Enix when they failed to stay in line. You keep changing things and saying this is better when it's not. You say that, you know, you're caring about the fans. The fans have been begging for a Thousand Year Door sequel or something of that akin since Sticker Star. But you made Paper Jam. You made Color Splash, which sold less than 200,000 copies. And now you're looking at Origami King and saying, look what we've made here. This is fresh. This is different. We don't care. We don't want different. We want something that we fell in love with all those years ago on the GameCube. We want something akin to Thousand Year Door. Now, you can take the base of Thousand Year Door, the stages, the RPG combat, and you can add new things to it. That's what Thousand Year Door did to the original. That's why most people agree that the second one's better than the first one, except for Tyler, but he's a heathen. We've known this for years.
Jeez.
All right? He is. I know. I mean, this is why he's not the host, okay? I try and be objective, all right? He still thinks money is better than love. I don't know why. He still does. I understand what you're coming from. You want to make things fresh and different, and again, to a degree, I respect that. The difference is that we're begging you to stop. We've been begging you to give a Thousand Year Door Part 2 or something back to that. You don't, and if Origami King doesn't sell, you can't blame us, because we didn't ask for this. Now, what happens if it sells well? I don't know. I'm probably not going to buy it. I'm not intrigued by this. And he had another quote about why he did away with the partner system, and it's just as frustrating, so I'm not going to read it. But it's like, you keep saying, he even said, I'm going to go back to the quote. He goes, it's much easier to carry over the basics from an existing game rather than building new systems. And then he said, to be sure, I will sometimes use the same game system to a subsequent game to further develop that system until I feel it's reached full potential. If you're telling me that you couldn't add more to the Thousand Year Door system to make it better, then you weren't challenging yourself enough. And that's the truth, because there's always something to add to an RPG system. That's why it's an RPG system. It's got the flexibility to add things. And that's the beauty of it. Here, I could think of one right off the top of my head. Mario and partner combo moves. Boom! 5 seconds. That's something new. That's something fresh. Wasn't in the first two games. Wasn't anything since, to my knowledge. So do that. New system. Bam! Right there.
Yeah. And also, yeah, when you mentioned that, I just can't help but also remember, a lot of people, many fans have been requested for the Paper Mario series to come back to form since Thousand Year Door, as you said. And I can only imagine, what could have they done to improve upon the RPG? I mean, heck, look at Persona. Ever since Persona, 1, 2, 3, and now up to 5 now, and including with Golden, it's just, they improved upon the system, just basically added tweak more, quality of life insurance. quality of life improvements, and then yeah, look at Persona 5, it's just selling like hotcakes. And like
it was the best selling game in the franchise. I mean, think about that, and that they didn't, like you said, they just kept improving things until they got it to where it is right now.
Right, and with Paper Mario, I feel like even takes like something back of their old great grandfather of Legend of the Seven Stars, like something of that akin. I would definitely appreciate, but again, it's just really wondering like why Nintendo does the Nintendo moves that they do right now. Is like, you listen to us, we're telling you exactly what we want, and like no, we're just gonna do this and hopefully that you like it, but we won't. I mean, perhaps it will do well, sure, there is definitely that possibility that Origami King may surprise us and may do good, who knows. We have to try it out to really see what they mean by that. But as of right now, a lot of people consensus is just saying like, yeah, this is not the Paper Mario that we asked. I didn't ask for this. Take a quote from Adam Jensen. I didn't ask for this. And it's just,
oh
like,
my God. Thank you for that one. Thank you, Will. People may not remember just who that guy is, but that was a good one.
Is yeah. Just like Nintendo, there are some, these are the kind of things like that you do listen to your fans, at the same time you don't listen to your fans. Like, you do realize we're your capital here. Like, we're the ones that's buying your product. Yeah, maybe you should take some bit more weight with our feedback, please. Yeah. So yeah, we're going to Origami King in the end. Like, I'm just gonna be waiting for reviews and see if it's like, if it's surprising, will surprise us, then okay. But if it's not the thing, don't say we didn't warn you.
I know it seems like we're just especially me, like I'm just harping, but it's not. I love this franchise. I liked the first three games. That includes the third one, Super Paper Mario. I thought that was better than it probably should have been, and I was pumped when Sticker Star came to the 3DS. I didn't get past level 2. I was so over it with the stickers and the just trying to having to look for everything, and then I wanted to give Color Splash a shot, and then I just heard the reviews, and sure enough, it was the worst game in the in sales of the franchise. And if I was to work at Nintendo and they asked me, what would you want to make? I would tell them, I want to make a Thousand Year Door sequel, basically. Because that's what Paper Mario fans want. And there are some haters that go, oh yeah, you Thousand Year Door stands. We're not stands. We know what we want. And this ain't it. Could the Origami King be good? Absolutely. Do I think it will? Not really. But I've been wrong before, as Tyler likes to remind me. So, oh, and for those wondering, no, Tyler is not on his porcelain throne tonight, time. Yeah. He won the Game of Thrones, as it were. He's with family right now, because it's a holiday weekend, so we gave him a pass. Unlike we're giving with Intelligent Systems, you do not get a pass. All right, moving on to good news. Min Min.
Ooh.
Yes, Min Min is finally in Smash Brothers, and Will, you have been playing as her, so give us a breakdown. What do you think?
I'm really surprised at how Min Min plays, because I've talked to some of my acquaintances, and sorry, you couldn't hear the fireworks. But Min Min is definitely a very different character, because like, as you know, like other characters in the Smash roster, they have like certain specialties, like special moves and all, of like how it reflects their own game. With arms, it is very different with Min Min, because like all you really have is basically punches and of course like the special moves of the rap, the arm smash down and all that, of the smash and all that. That's all really all it is. Min Min, that's the thing, because like A and B control both your arms. That's it. There's no particularly a special move with Min Min in this case. Not like the usual of the rest of the roster. So like when you use down to switch out your arms, you switch out to the Mega Quad or the Chakras for different attack styles to cover your bases. But all you really have is basically the spring jump, which is your up B, and of course the down B is basically your switching arms. So really nothing of a special move, quote unquote. So, but it is, again, very reminiscent of the original game of arms. So you switch out arms, you can throw out punches at certain distances. And yes, Min Min is definitely a distance demon, aside from Byleth of the formula. And playing as her in Quick Classics mode, Classic Arcade mode, She is definitely tough to use. She's definitely has a bit of a learning curve of like how to switch out arms as well, taking account into of your distance. Because unfortunately, I didn't manage to go and get that a high point of like an 8.0 at the end. But she definitely has potential. It's basically how you can utilize her punches. And of course, again, if someone dodges your punch, it's easily punishable. So like overall, Mimin is a fun character to use. It's just it takes a while to get used to her, especially her like switching out arm and like accounting at a lot of distance. But in regards to like everything else, like her kicks to deflect projectiles, it's yeah, very true call one-to-one to her original game. So overall, Mimin is fun, but it definitely has a learning curve to get used to.
But if you do get to master her, then, you know, you're probably in another tier. You know, you'd be more like armed and dangerous.
No.
Yes.
No, no.
Yes. Oh, man. Sorry, I am armed for battle.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
See, people look at Min Min and they see, like, the noodle cap and
yeah, right,
they
right.
see her outfit and you're like, oh, she can deflect with her legs, and they make fun of that. I'm like, dude, look at her arms!
I can understand, again, why Yabuki and the team just want, like, we want Min Min! Yeah, like, but I like it.
It's subverting expectations, because everyone's like, it's Spring Man or Ribbon Girl, or maybe they'll pull a feint with, like, Ninjara or King Mummy. But no! Yabuki was like, I'm putting my foot down, I want Min Min. And I respect that, Mr. Yabuki. I respect you. Just don't ask me to fight you in a match, I don't want to die. Alright, moving on. We have... Okay, this was actually a surprise story. Nintendo, for whatever reason, decided to release their NPD data for April. If you don't recall, NPD is the American numbers for consoles and games. And they revealed that the Nintendo Switch sold 800,000 units in the U.S. alone in April. And you're like, well, why is that so special? Well, for two reasons. One, that was full-on lockdown month. All right, that was because March was like half and half. The lockdown happened about the 18th, and then April comes around, and it's like they didn't miss a beat. And also, that was when their shortages started to happen. So they were having shortages all over the world, and they still sold 800,000 in the U.S. And I would bet more than likely that they sold about 100,000 each in the U.K. region and in Japan. So they more than likely sold 1 million in April during the lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, in another stat, this was double PS4 and Xbox One combined. Which, as many note, is not exactly impressive because the PS4 and the Xbox One are at the end of their system lives, but still. So, go ahead.
I can definitely, because I'm really, yeah, as I said, I'm actually surprised at how it still managed to sell, because one, obviously, the biggest seller that's biggest force for Nintendo Switch was obviously Animal Crossing New Horizons. But again, if no one's going to play, might as well play on Animal Crossing, which, again, that was the biggest trend for those few months. And, of course, naturally, there was, like, other games that forced it much more sales. I mean, of course, like, Ring Fit Adventure, if you can get it, so there's that. So, overall, it's just, like, how much Nintendo was still selling, even during those, during the time of lockdown, is just... All right. I mean, again, you can't stop the consumer. You can't stop them, even out of a worldwide pandemic.
All right. So I'm very curious to see how this goes in May, but we'll see. I don't know if it'll be as good, but you never know. All right. Sadly, back down to sad news. Super Nintendo World. It's canceled. I'm kidding.
Yep.
No, it's not canceled. The opening, though, has been delayed, which, honestly, if you're really thinking about it, it's not that much of a surprise. They were trying to construct this during the pandemic, and they were supposed to have it done before the Olympics, which were in Tokyo. That did not happen. So, though this is not official, technically, it's basically confirmed through various sources close to the park. And they noted that they are pushing it back to 2021, more than likely, though they did say that they probably could have the park done-ish, you know, like at least what they were planning to do before the original opening date. But it's more than likely going to be open to the public in Universal Studios Japan in 2021, which is when, obviously, the Tokyo Olympics have been postponed, too. So I know this is a bit of a blow, especially since I'm sure Japan would have loved to have this as kind of an exit strategy of them of some sort, because like, oh, everything's shut down, but hey, Nintendo World is open, so let's go crush some Goombas. But this is probably the best, not just for them, but for the park, because that gives them technically extra months to keep building and have an even more complete park, because at present, they were only going to have like the Mario sections done. The goal has always been to go beyond it with like Zelda and Mario Kart and various other franchises. But they started with Mario because obviously Mario was, well, Mario. Unless it's Tyler, then it's Mario. So, but I'm sad, you know, but this is technically, it's necessary because of the lockdown. It's necessary because, you know, you got to keep people safe with the construction workers building it and the park goers that would be going to it. And again, this could be beneficial in the long run, so you got to be smart here, and that's why they're delaying it. So I understand.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure you also checked out some of the video previews, like some people actually recorded, but like yeah, like actually see some of the attractions being in motion. Like I believe there was like a Koopa show actually moving on top of the Mario platform as last I saw it. I mean, overall, it is definitely shaping up pretty nicely. Yeah, I mean, again, it's going to take a while, and of course, with the lockdown, I mean, as I said, I'm also kind of pretty sad, but as soon as this thing is released, I'll definitely make it in my bucket list.
Yeah. What do you think, Keith? Would you want to go to a park like this if it comes to America?
No! Not right now, no!
No! Okay.
If we're out of the situation...
Yes!
If we're
out of the situation, because obviously
yeah,
it wouldn't be
course.
Here for like two years at least.
Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? If you're a
I
fan
don't
of
no,
if you're a fan of gaming, you want to go. It doesn't matter. If you like cool stuff, if you like having fun, if you like something interesting, and you like going to amusement parks, why would you not want to go? I mean, we go to Disney World and Disneyland and Six
Universal.
Flags and everywhere else. Why would you not want to go here either?
I don't know. I just wanted to be sure because sometimes
you
I just can't
fun.
Tell with you.
I hate fun. I'm not going. Give me the no fun sign. I don't. No more fun.
There you go. Much
no
better.
More fun.
No more
I'm
fun.
Done.
Fine. You know what we're going to talk about? Death.
Yes.
Specifically, I'm going to talk about dead cells, because cells suck. I don't care. Oh, wait, it's a video game? Okay, fine. Yes, Dead Cells, the video game, which are totally new. It has crossed another major milestone, 3 million sold.
I'm kind of disappointed in that numbers. I was hoping it would do more.
Well, it probably will do more, but over time. But considering that this is suddenly an indie game and it sold 3 million... That's very important, including apparently a lot on Switch, which again proves that the Switch is best for indie games.
I remember talking to the developers, French developers, when this game was still in its inception at PAX East many, many years ago. And I was like, man, this game is amazing. You guys are onto something. Hey! 3 million
yeah.
copies later.
Yeah, see? You predicted the future.
Damn, I should have predicted the lottery.
If only it was that easy.
Mm-hmm.
Boy. But yeah, seriously though, congrats to Dead Cells. I have heard nothing but great things about this game. I haven't played it personally, but I know about it. And
What?
There's a lot of indie games I haven't played. I want to play them, but A, money, B, time. I barely have time to play my own AAA first-party titles and third-party titles, and I can't play every indie game out there. So, but again, I've heard great things. In fact, today... Not so ironically, I saw the news about the game's success, and then I went to Twitter, and famous comic book writer Brian Edward Hill, who has written comics like Batman and the Outsiders, he wrote the the Black Panther villain.
Killmonger.
Killmonger. I kept thinking Kilgrave, and that's just Jessica Jones. Yes, Killmonger. He wrote the critically acclaimed Killmonger series for Marvel like 2 years back. And many more. He loves Dead Cells. He has it on Switch, which means he's totally welcome on this podcast anytime. And he's like, that game's awesome. It's easy to pick up. It's difficult to master. It's perfect to have on the go. So
hard to put down.
Yeah,
very
exactly.
Hard to put down.
Yeah, which is why he has it on Switch, because he knows he can put it down and get back to work. So, but yeah, congrats to the Dead Cells crew. Keith predicted it. You should have just hired him right there.
Right?
Right.
Hire me. Hire me right now.
And then Nintendo can hire me. And only me. Sorry, Will. I'm sure I can get you a job somewhere. I hear janitorial needs somebody. Kidding. Kidding. Now that's where we put Tyler. Moving on. So this one is another interesting piece of news. the Furukawa, the president of Nintendo currently, was doing his shareholders meeting, and he was asked about Nintendo Directs. And he noted that while Nintendo Directs are a great way of delivering information, he notes that they are open to other avenues of expressing this same news. As such, if they come up with a better way to do Nintendo Directs, then they'll slowly phase the Directs out to supplement this new method, whatever it may be. Now, that's not saying that they already have an idea, obviously, but they're already thinking of the next step, which is actually kind of refreshing, because if we recall, Nintendo Directs have only been around since 2011, when the Nintendo started to slowly wean off of E3 and their major press conferences to do more bite-sized information blasts, which we've appreciated ever since. So, if they come up with something better, okay. Just, you know, give us a lot of Nintendo Directs in the meantime!
It is definitely something to think about. Like, what would they do didn't do Nintendo Directs? I mean, of course, like, ever since the stage presentation back in E3, but like, I'm just so used to the stage, and now they gamble with the Nintendo Directs, which ran successfully, and now with everything with the lockdown and all that, like, what would be the next thing of a presentation outside Nintendo Directs? Like, I don't know. The Nintendo Directs are pretty much as digital as you can get in this age right now, so it's kind of hard to imagine, like, what would be the next form of their information presentations, say at least.
I don't know. What do you think, Keith, as a website owner who's, you know, always looking to do more content and such, what do you think Nintendo could do to make even better versions of Nintendo Directs?
Well, they could take a page out of other people's, like right now, what Microsoft is doing, or will be doing, and what Steam did for, is it Summer Game Fest? Where they offered demos of the games, or some of the upcoming games that they were talking about. Just an early hands-on for people to check those games ahead of time. Or maybe, instead of having just a direct, maybe have, and this is probably hard because of COVID-19, have an open session or a Q&A session where the actual people can talk to Nintendo or talk to the developers. But again, COVID-19 makes this very hard to do. Obviously, the directs are the best way for them to go. I think they're just feeling the crunch right now that even while they're doing the directs, it's not enough, but they're really limited to what they actually can do. I mean, look at the announcement from Min-Min. Look what they had to do to make that happen. That was a lot of work behind the scenes. Can you imagine doing that for more than just one person?
Yeah.
The logistics would be crazy. I mean, right now, honestly, the Direct is the best thing they got going for them. And it's not just them now. I mean, Microsoft's doing it. Sony's doing it. They hit a gold mine when they did the Directs. I guess maybe make them longer. Maybe offer some playable demos. Something to involve your community, something to involve your audience. Not just going, oh, hey, here's a game. Well, here's a game. Oh, hey, here's a game. Oh, hey, this game's coming soon. Here's another game. Okay, that's great. How about you talk to us? How about you have something that involves us? That's just my two cents.
No, that's a good two cents. Yeah. In fact, I think they should hire you along with your duties as part of the Dead Cells team, because I know you're so busy. So,
man.
Yeah, I know.
You know what? I wouldn't mind that.
I know. Trust me, I know. All right, and finally, Will's favorite piece of news, Ninjala!
Is that his favorite game? Is that your favorite game, man?
Favorite piece of news. Persona is his favorite. This is piece of news.
Outside other off-brand games, but I digress. But, yeah, in regard... As with the current release now, I think it was just released on Tuesday. I think Tuesday now. Holy crap. And yeah, Gung Ho's free to play game Ninjala has officially released it to actually surprisingly great sales. As of right now, Gung Ho's official Twitter account, Ninjala has been officially downloaded over 2 million times, which is quite something for a free to play game. I mean, outside of Fortnite and any other free-to-play game. Was Apex? Is Apex Legends on Switch? I forgot. But,
it's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming to Switch.
Yeah.
And overall, I'm gotta give props to Gung Ho. They actually, it is a very good, fun game to once you if you have any free time to spare. But not, I have played it. I mean, obviously the beginning, a lot of people try to get in and servers are all over it. But thankfully, it has smoothed out in patches. But overall, the game is fun. It is fun. It has its moments of like, yeah, just basically beating each other up with like ninjas and all that. And all, just as a quick note right now, regarding to any of the in-game purchases, like for the Ninjala Pass, all these things, it's pretty much as they say in the fine print. It's like anything you buy it is purely cosmetic. So basically very similar to the Fortnite kind of style. So like new outfits, ninja outfits, like very futuristic gear. It really is all cosmetic. So it doesn't affect the gameplay whatsoever. So it's all just like if you want to look good. But if there's any criticism I do have to give to Ninjala is regarding to like when you level and ranking, because it's very similar to like other multiplayer games, but it's basically I have no idea what I want to work to. Like I'm leveling up, I'm grinding, but if you're like a free to play gamer, you don't really get much once you like level up in tiers. If you buy the pass, like the Ninjala Pass for the season, which like, I think is only like in 4 to 8 weeks' time, then you basically get an extra boost of Ninjala gears, points, outfits to unlock as you upgrade, unlock the higher tiers. So it kind of gives that feeling of like, I don't know what I'm really working for. It's not really a whole purpose. There is like a story DLC I know that's currently out on sale right now, which basically gives some background to the lore of Ninjala outside of the official YouTube episodes they showed off. But overall, I mean, it's okay, but they definitely have some room to improve regarding to Ninjala's like basic content. Like, obviously, more maps, more weapons, and basically, like, really giving off that, like, what we're trying to, like, just do the grind outside, like, I don't know, in the style of Overwatch. Like, something is similar, like, go in the way of Splatoon. Like, I don't know, have a topic, like, I don't know, a big ninja battle, a ninja battle royale, something of that sort, So they still have a lot more to improve. But overall, Gung Ho, it is a good thing. Just continue to improve upon it.
I'm honestly surprised they got 2 million downloads, because when we first saw this, we were like, yeah, that's a Splatoon knockoff. And it's like, oh, it's free to play. Oh, that'll get them some downloads. But it did. So, now, let's be clear here, just because there's 2 million downloads doesn't mean there's 2 million people playing, alright? So, we don't know how many, like, active players they have, but the fact that 2 million people were willing to download it to try, good for them. So, I will never, of course, root for a game to fail, unless it's made by Microsoft. Zing! No.
Oh, boy.
Kidding, I'm not that petty. Or am I? I don't know, but I am the host. Alright. And as the host, I now direct us to our main event. I want you all to reflect on when the Switch was announced, all the way back in 2017. When they were announcing games like 1-2 Switch, there was something they made sure to advertise, that the Joy-Cons had an HD Rumble feature that would feature advanced motion controls, not unlike what the Wii did, which Will can attest to with 1-2 Switch and like the milking game and various other mini games that were in there.
I know. Might I like to point out that thing is probably the best game ever. I'm sorry.
Like, ever? It's like I can like milk the cow with like not actually milking the cow. It's like awesome. Anyway, and they noted that their intent was to go and use the HD Rumble in a variety of unique ways going forward. They haven't. In fact, the other game that we can honestly point to that uses the HD Rumble feature in a significant way is Ring Fit Adventure, and technically Labo, but that's not really the same thing. So, in light of this, and with the knowledge that, you know, they're going to be trying to make it relevant, hopefully again, we're going to talk about ways this could work, and what games they could try and make, focusing on the motion of the HD Rumble and beyond, and we're going to do this in a Nintendo discussion. Will, I want you to go first because you, of course, played 1-2 Switch and you are the king of Ring Fit Adventure currently. So give us your wisdom, O Master of Motion. What should Nintendo do to try and capitalize on the power of the HD Rumble?
Like, there is, they still have a lot to improve regarding to the, how they want to incorporate the HD Rumble. Like, we already saw some pretty good examples with Labo in their foray, quote unquote, to AR gaming or virtual reality, if you want to call it that. I mean, it's basically virtual gaming light, but it's still virtual gaming. And how they basically like use basic cardboard to emphasize like all these different contraptions and ideas. That's definitely a very good, solid idea. I mean, sure, it's definitely not meant for hardcore, but there a lot of casuals enjoy just the crafting and also making like great contraptions like that piano. And of course, with Ring Fit, which is a great move on Nintendo regarding to capitalizing the fitness market. And of course, like that to fill in the void that was left by Wii Fit back in the Wii and the Wii and Wii U times. That's pretty much great. I just really love how like the Joy-Cons can actually measure your heart rate, because if you were back during the Wii, they actually had that whole heart sensor, which they kind of scrapped it, which I think has now been reformatted to the Switch now. You guys can take your heart meter, see how fast your heart's beating. I mean, obviously you're not meant to replace any official heart meters like or Fitbits, but it is definitely a great move from Nintendo, especially in the fitness market. So how can Nintendo can improve upon their Joy-Con potential? Is that's one thing I'm still also trying to figure out myself. But one thing I could definitely imagine of like how they can improve upon it is like, I don't know. I'm basically thinking right now of like how they could also incorporate in Metroid with the current Metroid game in progress. Like, well, how can I bring HD Rumble Joy-Con in a Metroid game? I mean, sure, we have to have the influence from the Wii of like the IR sensor of point and shoot, like with the original Wii mode, or I don't know, actually have a tactile feel, because they also, if back in the 1-2 Switch mini games, you actually can actually sense the clicking of the save, which is, I gotta admit, is very good. It's very good. And of course, the marbles inside to imitate Rumble feature. So I can definitely see how they can incorporate like something like that, like a lock picking feature in a Metroid game, or even just like sense the tactile feel of, I don't know, feeling the feelings of a Metroid, a creature, or something that like gives that tactile feel. I mean, that's kind of the one thing, and I know Todd, you're gonna hate me for this, but that's kind of what they did with Sun and Kagura Reflections.
Not that game. That's kind of why did you see that game? Why did you see that game?
So that's kind of one thing I gotta appreciate Kenichiro Tanaka for exploring that realm. So yeah, that's and something of that sort, like really expand, like something that breaks that fourth wall breaking of like bringing the game into reality. So something in similar veins to like Labo of that sort, but basically incorporated with Nintendo IPs, like for example, could you listen to like the Pikmins from the Pikmin series on your HD Rumble, like, hear like and like that. It's just there's a lot of potential and feel that Nintendo has to do. It's just like really how they're gonna incorporate it, how to make it fun, and a lot of like IPs like Pikmin, Mario. I mean, would you imagine like having Mario's of course, actually throwing the hat, like something similar to Super Mario Odyssey or anything else. There's a lot of things they can probably do with this thing with HD Rumble. And like Zelda, even with like Breath of the Wild 2, I can only imagine now, like, could they also incorporate something in regards to like cooking, actually use it as an ocarina or bring back the ocarina? It's just, I have all these different ideas I'm swearing, and it really depends on how Nintendo can incorporate it. But I'll cut myself short, but it's just like how they can utilize the haptic features, the IR sensors of their Joy-Cons to really bring forth that extra potential in their IPs. So yeah, Metroid with the HD Rumble, Breath of the Wild 2 with HD Rumble. I can imagine how much they could expand upon it, and out. Aside from like being as a gimmick. So that's where my line of thinking is going with.
Now, see, I'm going to counter that, because let's reflect on the Wii era for a moment, which again was obviously one of their greatest eras. But the problem was that they had the unfortunate problem of having to try to incorporate motion controls into every single game. And it worked with mixed results. And some of them just straight up ignored it. And then there was ones like Skyward Sword where you had to use the motion controls to do like sword slashing. But if you think about like Mario Galaxy, what did you really do with the motion controls? You waggled it around to make Mario do one spin attack, and you could point the laser pointer to get all the gems. That was it. If you think about the HD Rumble, there's only two or three real games, per se, that they've used them in, and they're all original things. 1-2 Switch, Labo, and Ring Fit. So if I was Nintendo, I would keep that flow going. I would use the success of 1-2 Switch as your base plate and say, okay, we've proven we can do a lot of things with this HD Rumble feature. Then show what Ring Fit did with its, you know, focus on exercise, yet still being a game. And then continue to work out ideas of, like, new IP. Keep pushing the idea of this HD Rumble, but not attaching it to your first-party or even third-party franchises, because we saw where that went with the Wii, and that was one of the reasons a lot of people didn't come to the Wii in terms of third-party developers, because they didn't want to touch the motion controls. They didn't want to waste time thinking, oh, well, what happens if we do this with the motion controls, and yada, yada, yada. But when they focus on like just making a title built around that instead of just tacking it on, then they have something special, which is why Ring Fit Adventure is selling well, because people realize, yeah, it's an exercise game, but it's an exercise game that I actually feel, and Will and Tyler can both attest to that. And, you know, 1-2 Switch, it was odd, but it perfectly showed what the HD Rumble and the Joy-Cons could do. And that's what they need to be thinking about. Now, as for specific titles, I honestly don't know, because I never played those two games, and so my experiences with the HD Rumble is limited. However, the fact that they came up with these tiles and made it work. Because, again, the Ring Fit Adventure is the Joy-Cons with the HD Rumble attached to a ring. Like, that's it. It's not exactly elaborate, but it works. And that's what people need. They want something that's not that elaborate, and yet it works. Labo was elaborate. Labo, you know, you had to build it with the cardboard and everything. Nintendo sold you cardboard! All right, let's talk about it. Tyler keeps telling us that Labo failed. It did not fail. Nintendo got hundreds of thousands of people to buy cardboard. That's a win. I don't care who you are, okay?
I mean, is it really? I mean, it just means that people, can I say this, are suckers, and Nintendo can sell them a paper bag and they'll buy it?
There you go. Make a paper bag game. No, I'm just joking.
Super Baggio.
Oh, God.
How much stuff can you fill in this bag?
One Joy-Con. Two Joy-Cons.
I never bought into Labo. My whole argument was they're pizza boxes. Buy a pizza and cut it up. So,
I just got the perfect idea. You ready for this? You do a like one controller, okay, like one Joy-Con that controls the whole game. You do a Tokyo style racing game, and you call it Joy-Con Drift.
Oh boy!
I could see Nintendo doing that just to stick it to people. It's like, oh yeah, you were complaining about Joy-Con Drift? Well, here you go. Now you have a game off of it. So, and notice how I didn't just say a racing game, I said a Tokyo racing game, which is a reference to drift racing. You're welcome. That's why I'm the host. But honestly, though, a racing game using the HD Rumble could be good. Just got to make it, you know, unique and not just make another Mario Kart or what's that other racing title? Keith, the one that Nintendo's not using? What one is it?
Daytona USA?
Yes, that one. Daytona
USA. Yeah.
Let's go deeper. Let's bring back Mickey Speedway USA, the classic from the N64 era, which was totally not a riff on Mario Kart. It totally was. But, yeah, let's bring back that. Let's contact Disney. Let's make it happen. You know, they're always up for making some extra bucks, you know, unless they're making Solo. Anyway, so the potential here is there, as Will's noted, but the key from my end is don't try and tie your franchises into it, because you've proven over the last 3 years in full now that we don't really need the HD Rumble, we just need good games. But if you focus the HD Rumble as the base plate of the game itself, like you did with 1-2 Switch, like with Labo, which I know it needed cardboard, and with Ring Fit Adventure, then you have the freedom to say, how far can we push this? So that's what I think Nintendo needs to do. If anything, bring in some new talent. Bring in some new minds and say, here's the HD Rumble. Make something with it. See what they do. What's the worst that could happen? The Virtual Boy? You've already done that.
Oh, gosh.
Mom, why am I only seeing red? Fun fact, I did play the Virtual Boy at a Toys R Us. I didn't get it. I was like, okay, it's kind of...
Can we just stop for a second and just reflect on how great Toys R Us was when we were kids? You would go there,
yeah.
And they'd have all the consoles and behind glass or the plexiglass, and you would look at them and go, wow, this is so cool. And you walk up and down the aisles, and now
yeah.
It's like...
I still remember my days that during Funko Land.
Those days are over.
I wanted to play the Sly Cooper franchise because they had a demo station of Sly Cooper and the Thievius Arcanus, and I wanted to play it. Although I got my PlayStation 2 at a local like knockoff Walmart, I got my first three PS2 games at Toys R Us because they were having a sale. I got Kingdom Hearts, I got Sly Cooper, and the Lord of the Rings Two Towers video game. Because I didn't understand that video games based off of movies were bad, and this one totally was. But hey, it had behind-the-scenes features, and it was cool. So yeah. But yeah, Toys R Us, rest in peace. Rest in peace. You know what they turned mine into? A fitness center, which now nobody uses because it's locked down. What are you going to do? Keith, do you have any thoughts on what Nintendo could do with the HD Rumbles?
Nope, not really.
That's fine.
Can I be honest with you? I've never been a fan of Rumble and an actual controller. Because
not even the fact that in SD4 days?
No, because it's not true feedback.
Okay.
Well, I mean, but like that's the thing here is that with the Joy-Con one, it honestly is. That's why 1-2 Switch was so interesting, was because you actually felt like you were milking a cow and doing that stuff because you could honestly feel it. It wasn't just, oh, it's vibrating because I'm touching a nut or whatever.
But it still is vibrating. I mean, I want actual impact. Actual impact. And I know no gaming technology has been able to recreate that or to create that at all. So I've never been a fan of it. I've been spoiled. I grew up in the age of arcades. You know, when you actually was an arcade and you actually had machines that actually gave you actual feedback. And I've always wanted that experience at home, and we've yet to get it. So I'm kind of spoiled.
Couldn't tell.
I mean, seriously, like a great example is, have you ever played a game from Atari and arcades called Hard Driving?
I can honestly say I have not.
Well, have you played it?
It sounds familiar. I haven't played it.
So what this game was, and this is a blast from the past. So basically, people likened this to a driving simulator. It was actually a real life simulator that you can actually use it to take a driving test in. And it was so realistic. It had the force feedback where if you were actually driving off the side of the road into grass, you literally felt it. If you hit a car, or if you sideswipe something, the steering wheel will literally forcibly jerk you the other way. It was true feedback. And I spent days, weeks on that game. And I always wanted something like that for home. And we never got it. We never will get it.
I'm sorry for your loss.
But yeah, that's some trivia for you. Go check that out, Hard Driving.
I can definitely understand why, like, again, you want that immersion, like, not just something that you can feel in your hand, like, feel the impact. Like, I know, like, there has been, like, some, like, PC and, like, other indie ventures, like, for example, you wear a vest, you actually get shot.
Yeah,
quote-unquote.
I mean, we're
like,
getting there, but at what cost? I mean, all that stuff is super expensive.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't want to be Thanos.
Thing. I am inevitable. Like, I could create the next great video game experience. I don't even know who you are.
I've watched that movie way too many times, by the way.
It's a good
movie. Endgame was really good. I mean, it totally is wrong in how time travel works, and the Avengers Assemble scene. It's both epic and yet confusing because half those characters should not be there. Like, where did Valkyrie get her horse? Her horse was killed. It definitively stated that
it's
her
another
horse was dead.
It's another horse.
But where did she get the other horse? She was in Norway. She was in Norway. Where was the Pegasus in Norway?
Pocket dimension.
Okay, we're it specifically stated that the spaceships above the Avengers were Kraglin and the Ravagers. When did they have time to contact them? It's been 5 years, and Quill has been dead. Where did they come from?
Nebula.
Nebula didn't have. Nebula was gone or was incapacitated at that time. She didn't exactly have a lot of time to go and contact the Ravagers. And why would they listen to her?
Because they're friends now.
They weren't friends. They were never. We're not doing this. This is another podcast. And we actually did a podcast on this actually a long time ago. A Thanos snap away, if you will. So go check that out. But yes, it was a good movie. You're not wrong for quoting it. Did you do the Twitter quote fest of I've seen it 42 times? Are you up there with Endgame?
I'm way past that. Oh my god!
I think I'm there with a Guardians of the Galaxy because I really love that movie. I'm close with Batman v Superman.
It's getting to the point where I can say every line from the movie. Now the only movie I've ever done that is Transformers animated movie. Like I literally can just turn the audio off and recite every line word for word.
So, in your dying day, would you say that you want us to use the power of the Matrix to light our darkest hour?
Only if I'm not Ultra Magnus, because he didn't get that to work for him.
Yeah. So you'll never live up to his legacy, Ironhide. Moving on. So, with that, we are ending this episode of Avengers Endgame Podcast. I mean, Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler! Tyler! Tyler, get off your throne! Yeah, I'm talking to you. Fine, be that way. Yes, no poll this week. So sorry. But we do, of course, want you to talk with us about what your feelings are on the Joy-Con issue, what the Paper Mario team had to say about the birth of Origami King and the recent titles. How are you enjoying Min Min and Smash Brothers? Did you get a Switch in April? Were you one of the people who got Dead Cells or downloaded Ninjala? Do let us know in the comments below. So, for Wario Will and King Koopa Keith, I am Triforce Todd. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We've made it to the end of the level. So, raise the flag!